Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, ladies, so today Dominique has a topic that she would like to discuss. Talk to us, Dominique. What do you think?
So I'd like to talk about the differences between being a parent of someone with addiction and being a partner of someone with addiction and applying CRAFT. What are the differences in its application? What are the differences in the sort of perceptions, obligations? CRAFT was designed to work on anyone, any duo, whether you're a grandparent working with grandchild or the other way around. CRAFT is designed to work with everyone. But there are differences in the people that get CRAFT applied to them. And the couples are raising more and more questions as we go on with CRAFT. And we're just tailoring it up to partners, trying to equal out the work that we do with parents, which is the majority of us at Allies in Recovery. But we have a significant group of partners and other siblings and other folks like that. But partners in particular, I think, create a different set of questions or applications of CRAFT. So let's talk about couples.
Yeah, that's great. So the first word that comes to mind for me is dependency issues. So what happens is that with a partner, there's often this interdependence of finances, interdependence of responsibilities, interdependence of maintaining a life and a lifestyle. So the engagement on that level changes the choices that you're going to make, because a lot of times when we look at parents, there's a reverse dependency where the parents are taking care of, and the questions always are, how do I take care of this person? Where's the line of me taking care of this adult? But there's this sense of like, this is my child. I have to be there for them in a particular way. And partners do not have the same sense of obligation necessarily, that you're mine forever and I will take care of you no matter what happens and you're my person. Because, you know, there can come a point when you're like, okay, I can't do this anymore. And then that's what divorce is about. It's a severed relationship unless there are children involved. But there's also the financial issues and how the children are affected and how much they're taking responsibility around the household, because that's the equity issue, that this fairness we're talking about.
I hear a lot about couples where the one partner doesn't know if it's appropriate to actually ask for more participation in the relationship. They're almost afraid to, or they're almost more focused on, well, I'll let them recover and I'll take up the slack and I will do all of this. But they're getting very resentful, and almost feeling like they have to do it, especially when there's like children involved. But once I start talking to them and saying, no, you are in a relationship. You are in a partner relationship. You have every right to start asking for your needs to be met. And that's an easier concept for couples to understand rather than mom and dad or grandmother and grandson. So it's unique that way. And it, in some ways, it's a little bit of a benefit, but it's also, it makes it complicated, especially like what Kayla was saying, when we're talking about kids, we've got two or three kids. What if my partner doesn't step up to the plate and start doing what I am asking for? Or the nature of the relationship and fairness, I don't want to say equity or equality, because oftentimes relationships are not equal. Sometimes you're giving 10 and they're giving 90, or sometimes you're giving 50 and they're giving 50. But with partners or romantic relationships, asking for what you need can be a little bit easier and can be helpful. And when we start talking to couples and telling them, it's okay, go ahead and start asking for what you need in the relationship, it's almost like a relief.
Yeah, but it's also fraught. That's the problem, because you're asking for what you need from somebody that you're not even sure if they could give it to you. And so it gets so messy, because here it is. If I ask, are they going to relapse? If I ask, are they going to fight with me? If I ask, am I setting them up to fail? Or am I setting myself up for disappointment? And there's this kind of underlying dynamic with couples where sometimes to get through something, you're actually trying to not be in touch with how you feel or what you want or what you need to be able to keep moving. Because if I sit down and get in touch with that, then why am I staying here? So it's this very fragile situation at times. And if you look at the couples that we're working with, a lot of times what's happening is the person goes into treatment, they get better, things improve for a while, and then they relapse. So it's this chronic disappointment in the relationship. And it winds up building resentment because if somebody relapses, everything is on the partner that's not using.
And it becomes an obsession because with every cycle, the non-affected person with addiction is trying to thread a needle and trying to get their loved one on track desperately because everything falls apart as soon as they use, or the relationship is at high risk of failure when they go back to it. So everything depends on them getting help or doing something about their use. And I think parents are able to step back and maybe a little bit easier over time as they start to see the cycle repeat, not necessarily recovery to relapse, but in daily cycles, and are maybe able to step back, take it a little less personally, maybe a little less personally than an affected intimate partner.
So I think I disagree a little bit on that, because when you two are describing this, I think parents go through the same thing. I think that they're threading that needle, that they are doing the exact same thing. The thing that I think may be different, and I'm saying maybe because I have not been a partner to someone who struggles with substance use. I've been a mom of someone. But I think the difference is that as a mom, as a dad, this child, this adult child is linked to me for life because I gave birth to them or I raised them, versus a couple situation where we're not linked like that. And I need you to participate as a partner. And I totally get the fear and the anxiety. And I actually think it's wrapped up in this fear that they might leave me, and it's me, it's a rejection of me, kind of like it's a breakup. And we all as human beings, having been in love relationships and breaking up with someone, we take it personally. So that worry and that anxiety of that, and throw in a couple of kids, you want to do everything in your power to hold that family together for the kids.
That's right.
This is a really important point, Lori, which is that if you're in a relationship with somebody who's using substances, you are in a relationship that feels like an affair. There is this other entity that has priority over you, that they're going to comfort for, that they're going for the escape. It's like the Calgon take me away thing. It's like this draw of like, oh, this works so well and it's amazing. And then there's the part in you. You're asking them for things and you want things from them. The substances don't want anything. So it's this free and clear, let's just escape. And you're the one that's like, did you take out the trash? How are you going to work? So it sets up this weird dynamic of you being the nag if you want anything. And that's what gets difficult about this. And it's exactly the same when somebody's having an affair, that's the release valve and you're the burden. The partner that wants something is the burden. That's exactly why people have affairs, because they can get release.
Yeah. And the affair with addiction, like an affair with another person, it's all this secrecy and you can feel it in the air and you know you're not being honest and you just have doubts, and it creates this stress and this, again, obsession. And so it leads me to ask you both about this term codependency, because it gets used a lot, and it's the idea that somehow the non-affected person with addiction in the couple is overreaching, is overprotective, is needing to protect their own feelings by aggressively manipulating the other and trying to control the other. That's the popular term. How does that fit in what we're talking about?
I hate that word.
I hate it.
I hate that word. It feels judgmental, accusatory, blaming, shall I go on? It's terrible because people wind up having particular behaviors in response to somebody else's behaviors. And so you're working with this very difficult human being and trying to figure out how to live with them and how to work with them and how to partner with them and how to engage with them and how to keep yourself and everything around you safe. And so you're just trying to do your best. And yes, you might have a package of skill sets that don't work in this situation or feel like they're ineffective, but that doesn't mean you're codependent. That means you're trying to figure this thing out. And so take the judgment out. It's like, how do you do this? How do you move forward? It's not like there's this brilliant answer to how to live with somebody who's using. It's difficult.
I hate it too, because it's weaponized. And to be honest with you, there's lots of other illnesses where people would be considered codependent, but it's weaponized with substance use disorder, right? And I think what we're talking about here is normal, whatever normal is, but it's human behavior. That is the response in that romantic relationship, is to behave like a human being. And I have a funny feeling if we're hearing the same thing over and over and over again from all of these couples that are trying to cope with their partner's substance use, and they're all responding in a similar way, I would say it's just human behavior. And like Kayla said, I think they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to figure it out. They just haven't found anything that works and works well, which brings you to craft.
Exactly. I was just thinking the same thing.
Before we go to craft, though, can you talk about attachment? Because I think families that have themselves difficult attachment style, an insecure attachment style, and there's some work out there, good work on attachment. Our colleague John Fitzgerald talks a lot about attachment. But if you happen to be a partner of somebody with addiction and you yourself have insecure attachment, and this person is coming and going to the beat of a different band, not yours, but the drugs, you are feeling deeply, deeply hurt, back and forth, back and forth. When that person reacts to something other than you in priority over and over again and disappoints you, but also just the action of it. I've had that. I've lived with somebody with addiction, and it's really disturbing to your core how hurtful that is. It's like a jealousy you can't even imagine somehow.
But just a little bit about attachment. The main results that they found is that people who have particular attachment style are drawn to somebody else who has a similar attachment style. So sorry, but that is part of the deal. And if you go through what the Imago theory is that you're drawn to somebody who's going to bring up your issues so that you could work on them. So that doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's just that if you don't have the tools to do the work, but also, like, for example, with when I do couples counseling, clearly people have the same attachment style. If you have insecure attachment, very few people come in with secure attachment to my office because they could work things out. But what happens is if you have issues with attachment, you're going to have somebody who has a similar issue with attachment. And then the job of your relationship is to play it out so you could heal it. But if you don't have effective tools, there's no healing. You're just continually going to hurt each other over and over again. And that's back to the craft thing. The reason that we do this is because we have a tool set. We have a toolbox that people could use, if nothing else, than to heal themselves. You know, I've been grappling with this whole idea of therapeutic therapy and treatment when it comes to craft. And I feel like what we have is a set of tools that lead you to healing. It's not that this is therapy. If you go to therapy, what happens is you're working on getting insight, but you're also working on increasing the set of tools that you have. So on some level, what we're doing is if you practice this, it leads you to a format of healing. But you have to look at yourself and look at what's getting triggered. What's my role in this? How is this playing out some of my childhood stuff? And then how do I work on decreasing my reactivity so I can make more conscious and more effective decisions?
I like what you're saying, Kayla, and I want to build on what you're saying, because I think it's a really important aspect to understand that healing absolutely starts with reflecting on yourself and changing the way you respond to things. That's what you're going to get. I don't care what type of therapy or what type of counselor you're meeting with. There's all different types of therapy, but all of it is based on looking at yourself and reflecting and finding your peace and how can you change and what can you do. And really, that is what craft is. But also understand it's healing for you, but it's also healing for your relationship. So you're healing both and you're learning how to interact with someone in a better way that maybe they will change in a way that you're hoping for. They might not. Nothing is ever a guarantee, but it isn't just healing for you. It ends up being healing for the relationship. And I would even say a lot of the time, it's not just healing for that one relationship. It's healing for multiple relationships. So like in the case of partners, when there's children there, if you have healing of mom and dad or mom and mom or dad and dad, you have healing for the family as a whole. So I want to expand on that because it's one of those things that when I first started on my journey and everybody kept telling me to focus on myself, I couldn't understand this concept. It was like, no, I don't want to heal alone. And it's not until later that I realized, oh, I'm going to heal, but I'm going to heal a whole bunch of things in my life, not just me. I'm going to be able to heal my relationship or make my relationship better. And it's also good for the rest of the family and so on. You know, Fabergé commercial. And they told two friends and they told two friends. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, you're setting the foundation to get your loved one to say yes. Because by healing the relationship, they feel more open and willing to say when it hurts, right? I've said this a million times, but that's the opening we're looking for. That's how, rather than run from you, they come towards you. And it's not just for money. It's actually for help. It's when it hurts, it hurts. And that's the gift of craft, is getting that out of your loved one. We call it a wish or a dip, right? A wish is, you know, I'm hurting and I wish I could just take one class, go do something, because nobody's left in the neighborhood. I feel like everybody's off to college, you know. Sure, why don't we take a look at the community college nearby? We'll look at one course and maybe we put in a career coach who's a recovery coach in disguise on with you in order to help you figure out what might be most interesting. You know, so that's a wish or a dip. I can't stand this. I'm hurting. I don't know what to do, Mom. And yeah, I've seen you, you're struggling. How about we take a look at that list I made a while back and see if something looks like it might be useful to you.
All right. But I just want to point out, you just went back to parents because that's our go-to. So what's the same scenario, but with a partner? What would you say to a partner about that?
It's the same idea. The wish or the dip might be the same, might be absolutely the same, you know? My husband says to me, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't stand myself. I know I'm hurting you. I know it's not working. I know I have a problem.
I want to change careers.
Yeah, I want to change careers. Okay, well, let's look at that. And maybe we can look at something that will shift this. So, because I know you're so unhappy with the work. But in order to shift careers, I think we're going to have to add something to help you cut back on the beers, frankly, and get you more focused than you've been able to, because there are forms and things you really dislike. So I think adding somebody in might be really useful. Let's take a look at this list that I developed a while back. I think there's a career coach on there.
And we actually had a family a few years back, same exact scenario. And that's exactly what the wife did, was she supported her partner in going back to school because he wanted to change careers, and she stuck with him. And it did mean that he needed to go into, I'm pretty sure he went into inpatient for like 30 days, and he was very agreeable to it. And she was working craft. We had been working with her and trying to help her, and she was implementing craft with her husband, and they're still together today.
That's great.
Yeah. In fact, I spoke with them recently and things are going well. Yeah, craft works for partners too.
We just had a woman write us and said, you know, I'm canceling my membership. It's been a couple years. My husband and I are doing really well. He's 2 years abstinent. He is forthright about his drinking and our relationship. I'm thinking of making a little blog post on the site about it because it was sort of textbook. And over the years, she wrote in a few times and we answered her and people commented. And for her, it was a full experience of understanding craft. And in those years, we didn't even have Lori or Kayla. It was just the blogs and the modules and the e-learning. So it's very easy to pick up something that's going to start you on your way by just taking a look at craft.
The one thing I want to add is that as a therapist, there's something therapeutic about what we're doing. Okay. You go to one of Lori's groups, you're taking your behavior apart. You're looking at yourself, you're digging, you're really taking like one topic and diving deep. That's such a gift and such an amazing opportunity. You're looking at the modules and looking at, you're basically superimposing yourself over what they're talking about, what we're talking about, and how to plug yourself in. You're coming to my group and talking and getting support and hearing what other people are doing. It's so important that partners and loved ones really, and family members really look at this as a healing process, because there's so much stress involved in dealing with somebody who's using, but there's also a lot of possibilities for joy and growth and change. And when I look at Allies in Recovery, I think this is your chance to dig in and do some real work on yourself. And what a gift, because no matter what happens with your loved one, you get a chance to change and grow. And that's the gift. By the way, that's the gift of therapy. That's the gift of couples counseling. You don't go in to change somebody else. You go in to change yourself. So if you could look at all of this as, how do I work on myself so that I could be more of myself? And then that gives you more opportunity to grow and change. That's what Allies in Recovery really gives you a chance to do.
I just thought of something really funny because of what you said, Kayla. I just thought about how I used to go into therapy thinking, how can I get the other person to change? Like, I'd feel so much better if they'd change. And it wasn't until I got to Allies in Recovery that it was like, oh, no, Lori, you're responsible for your own feelings. It's not in somebody else, but just kind of giggling.
All right, so I'm going to bring it home with that one, because here's the deal. I call the desire to change yourself the power position, because you're not waiting, you're not a victim, you're not vulnerable. If you're looking at yourself, you are taking your power. This is why research is really good, knowing what your options are and looking at how you are acting and reacting, it's unbelievably powerful. So by you looking at yourself and focusing on you and what you're doing and not doing, you get to have power. That's the gift.
Awesome.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.